So our producer, Charles Monroe Kane, is one of those guys who can captivate an entire bar with stories from his life. A lot of them are from the period when he was living in Prague in his 20s, with the whole underground rave scene and self-medicating with way, way too many drugs. So Charles is a great storyteller, and he's had an adventurous life. The thing is, I've heard his stories for years, and he doesn't always tell them exactly the same way. They've shifted over time, morphed a bit, as Charles himself has changed. Well, now he's put a bunch of them down on paper in a new memoir called Lithium Jesus. So are these the definitive versions? The literal truth? Is there even such a thing? In any case, here's one of our favorites.
Mark is a strange guy. He's this cynical Russian Jew who wears only rubber, and he has a finger in his ear, an actual human finger he wears in the ear. And when I first met him, he was recovering from an absinthe binge, which put him into a coma, and he lost his pancreas. Me at the time, I was just this bored dude. I was this idealist cook at a sports bar in Prague who did a lot of meth and drank a lot. We hit it off swimmingly. We become really good friends, and we bonded over this thing in the early 1990s called the internet. And one thing led to another, and we decided, let's open up the first ever internet cafe in Eastern Europe, and we're going to call it the Terminal Bar. We were very extravagant in opening up this internet cafe. We had dozens of employees. We opened up a cinema next door, a bookstore. We bought an entire building and rehabbed it for $900,000. We spent 2 years and another $500,000 just getting it ready. It was incredible until one day when on my way to work, I had a little note found in the front of the internet cafe, and it says, Chuck, we need to talk. And it was from Mark. This guy normally wakes up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and this was like 7 in the morning, and he was awake and he was crying. On his kitchen table was a box, and inside the box was a cow eyeball. And on top of the cow eyeball, written in blood, said, pay up. Marquetta, his lovely girlfriend, she worked for the mob, which I had no idea. And she was doing real estate deals for the Italian mob with the Chechens. And she was skimming off the top between the Chechens and the Italians. And she needed to launder the money that she was skimming. And she needed an unwitting guy who would run a business, who would spend too much money, go over budget, go beyond deadline, to be her money launderer. That would be me. But there was more. She had gone over $250,000 she had messed up with the Chechens. And they grabbed her. And they said, you got 72 hours to give us $250,000 or we're going to put a bullet in her head. The guys in Italy, a guy named Antonio, he was willing to pay off the debt to the Chechen mob, the $250,000, because he was making a lot of money through Marquetta's deals. But somebody had to come and pick up the money, smuggle the money from Italy all the way to Prague to give to the Chechens. Mark's like, I can't go, man. I'm recovering from my coma where I had lost my pancreas from drinking too much absinthe. But the Italians trust you. I'm like, Italians trust me? I don't know any mobsters. How could they trust me? He said, it's Antonio. You remember Antonio? I'm like, oh, my opera buddy. You know, a lot of people would say, oh, I'm going to save her life. I'm going to, you know, save the internet cafe. That's not why I went. I thought it'd be fun. I went on a lark. And I took my best friend, Mr. D, with me. And together, we drove all the way to Verona, about 12 hours, from Prague. We got there. We just to show the larkness of our existence at the time, we, like, did a line of meth in the car before we went down there. We get to the hotel that we had in Verona, and we drank bottles of liquor. We got wasted. We were completely out of control. We broke mirrors. We peed on the floor. And in the morning, we woke up, and I remember I had fuzz in my nose from a mattress I had ripped open, and the bellhop was waking me up saying, your guests are here. I opened up the hotel door, and there he was, Antonio. Not the opera Antonio I knew, who was really fun to hang out with, by the way. But this was the guy in the black suit, and he looked scary. And next to him were two henchmen, and each one had handcuffs on, and the handcuffs were attached to a metal suitcase. Each one of them had their sports jackets unbuttoned, and you could see, you know, that leather case hanging out, and you could see their guns. Lark was officially over. It was such a terrible experience to look at those guns and to think about all the questions I hadn't asked myself, all the things I should have asked, like, is this illegal to do? Will I get shot at the border? Will I go to jail? Eventually, we get the money, we get organized, we get out, we get in our car. I got to pause for a moment and tell you the car that we brought. We brought Marquetta's car. We thought it'd be cool to bring her car, right? We're saving her life. She drove a Škoda, which is the national car of the Czech Republic. Škoda in the Czech language means pity. It's what you say if you stub your toe. Oh, Škoda. Oh, you know, Škoda. You know, spilled your coffee on your paper. Škoda. So we're driving our Škoda, and we cross our first border, the Italian-Austrian border, and then the fates were not smiling upon us. Our car died, and it would never to be driven again. And we spent the next 48 hours spending the night in a horse stable at airports, bus depots, train stations. We didn't know what we were doing. We were trying to figure out how to get back to Prague. Eventually, we rent a car. We buy new suits. We shave our beards and goatees and take our piercings out. And we said, let's do this. And we get on the Autobahn, take it to the one place we feared. And that place was the German-Czech border. It was a smuggler's paradise on a good day, full of gypsies and thieves and prostitutes. Prostitutes who would wear 1980s aerobic gear, and that's how you knew they were prostitutes. It was just a surreal, surreal place. And there we were, waiting in line, freaking out. And then we get to the border, you know, crossing, and the border guard looks at us and says, pull over. And then there's like this eruption of sound, and I don't know what it is, and it's snowing, so I wrote on the window, and I hear it, and then I heard, Letni, goal, Letni, goal! The Czech Republic had just won the European Championship in hockey, and the border guards went crazy, they're totally excited, they're jumping around, and Mr. D quietly and slowly, just 5 miles an hour, gets the car, and we cross the border. The moment we crossed the border, I remember it because it was like someone had turned down the volume. And it was like I was in this surreal movie, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. And when we get to Prague to deliver the money to Mark, the city was in impromptu celebration. It was fantastic, but I couldn't hear anything. I was like in this weird bubble. And we get to his apartment. I remember ringing the door and then lifting my head back. When I lifted my head back, I could feel the snow melting on my face. And I just remember saying, I'm done. That's it. I am done with all of it. I'm not sure what it was. Was it the drug lifestyle? Was it this crazy lifestyle that would say, hey, it's okay to smuggle money for the mob? I don't know what it was, but I was done with it. And within a few months, it was over. I left and never went back again. That was almost 20 years ago. And I think back at that moment now and realize what a major moment it was. And it also makes me think about how we tell the stories of our past. For me, and I think for a lot of people, we exaggerate the stories of our past. Some people exaggerate, like the quarterback in the bar, how many touchdowns he threw, or some of us make ourselves goats of the past and the butt of our own jokes. And I wanted to move forward in my life, and I thought the only way I could move forward was to understand my past. Not the BS version of my past you tell in bars, but the real version of my past. And to do that, I realized the only way to do that was to not judge anyone, not to judge people like Mark, who obviously was not a very cool friend, to not judge many, many, many people in my life who have hurt me, like many people who have hurt you in your life, to not judge them. And most importantly, and I think the hardest one, to not judge yourself. And I think once I realized I didn't have to judge myself anymore, then I think I found my path. And with that, I found my narrative. And that's how I found my story.
That's our producer, Charles Monroe Kane. He tells that story and many more in his new memoir. It's called Lithium Jesus.